This is Jack Loeffler. 500 years ago, when Europeans first trickled into the Western Hemisphere, the human population of our planet was poised at about 500 million souls, or less than 10% of our current population. At that time, only 75 million people lived on the North and South American continents. Demographers contend that only 6 million people lived in what is now the coterminous United States. That is only half the number of people now living in the Los Angeles megalopolitan area. Our species has overcrowded this exquisite planet to the extent that in our quest for domination over nature, we have destroyed and continue to destroy vast expanses of habitat and millions of species of fellow creatures. Western culture has been seduced by techno-fantasy and growth for the sake of growth. We have idealized our own species to the extent that we have evolved a cultural disregard for the remarkable panoply of life forms of which our species is but a member. Other cultures have not been so frivolous. There are still some who see themselves as partners with nature, who live in a state of reciprocity with other creatures, who perform ceremonies and rites to which nature responds favorably. As anthropologist Edward Dozier, who is a native of the Santa Clara Pueblo, wrote, "Man alone can disrupt universal equilibrium by thought, word, or deed. The consequences of imbalance are illness, disaster, drought. Rites and ceremonies properly performed keep the seasons moving, allow the sun to rise and set properly, bring rain and snow, and ensure a well-ordered physical environment and society." The Tewa-speaking people who live in the pueblos along the northern Rio Grande have lived according to their comprehension of the flow of nature, as taught by their ancestors whose lineage extends millennia into the past. They understand the undeniable necessity of honoring the spirit of place.
It's very, very important that all of us realize that we're part of the Tewa world, in the sense that we're ringed by not only physical mountain ranges, the Pajarito Plateau and on the other side, the Sangre de Cristos, but if we really believe in something called quality of life, I think it would be well for us to remember whatever was defined by the earliest people here in defining their universe. The area we live in is a little crucible, and it's bounded and it's shaped and it's defined by the physical mountain ranges. But also, I think it's within that crucible that for 10,000 years, perhaps even longer, people have learned to live on the margin of many, many kinds of limitations. And I think it would be well for us to remember, both in terms of physical archaeological evidence, what happens when you overuse or neglect basic limitations in the human and material resources that define a land that's got very little water. And when it gets too much. It has to be retained, has to be used sparingly, and so on. All that, seems to me, boils down to what kind of living patterns were established here. And to my knowledge, the earliest inhabitants built either in tufa cliffs, where nature already created a natural self-limiting design as to expansion of the numbers of people, and also provided those kinds of natural catches for the water or the natural areas which could be watered and developed as agricultural fields and so forth. And around it all, of course, was another kind of subsistence pattern, hunting and gathering.
As Pueblo people were agriculturalists, and we depend upon the water, we depend upon irrigating. I had almost given up on my crops. This year my corn was had a rough start and almost didn't make it. We did 1 month of ceremony, and finally the rains came. And as the rains came, my corn grew about a foot a week, it seemed like. Of course, along with it were the weeds, so I had a bumper crop of corn and a bumper crop of weeds this year, but we were very blessed, you know, by the community involvement of the people, of everyone, you know, the prayers that are sent up. So one of the ways that we've been able to maintain within this world thus far is, again, the ceremonies, the prayers, which are done through dances, by the community, people, members, clans, extended families. We were able to maintain ourselves along this river and its work. A community of men coming together to put their work in cleaning the ditches, or acequias, as they're called by the Spanish, or cuyong, as we call them in Tewa. We're able to hold on to the water that we need, and we're dependent upon the rainfall, the snowfall, and the recharge areas. Recharge areas are very slow with the amount of people that we are currently getting into our areas. So in the future, I see a drawdown, a tremendous drawdown, which has happened again in the past, and not so long ago. We see some of the ruins that were left by our ancestors, Chaco Canyon, Mesa Verde, Canyon de Chelly, and others, because they were dependent upon the surface flow. But now it's a little more intense because we're looking at drawdown of the underground rivers, or aquifers as they're called. And when we get this drawdown, it's going to be a little more intense.
The old ancestral people moved through this region for thousands of years. And the intimacy that they developed with the land, I think, is what has kept them going for so long in such a place. And even today, I think we've forgotten that has helped our people survive for so long, is that intimacy that we had with the land, with the place, with the rocks, the mountains. Part of that intimacy, of course, was, especially in this region, is to know where the water areas are. The water is seen as being absolutely important for life. Without it, creation doesn't happen, you know. It's the semen of the Father that keeps creation going. But the snaking water through this region, the Rio Grande, the lakes, and of course throughout all of Pueblo mythology, the lakes are very important. All water places are extremely important, because that's, without water we don't survive here. And it's so sparse that they do have to become very special places. But they're also those places at which the energy of the world is very strong, because they're also openings, places to go to the underworlds, or, you know, to other levels of existence. There are openings also into the other world. The Rio Grande is a place that is also frightening to the Pueblo people. It's frightening because it comes with incredible power. It's the power. And that's why I think that we talk about the water, wind, breath, because the power of all of creation is there. And it can be in the wind, and it is and certainly in the water, especially in that strong flowing water that we know it, you know. And the word in Tewa for Rio Grande is Osonge, the large water place.
So if you go around some of these sites here in New Mexico, in El Rito and La Bajada Hill, you can see some of the old terracing that was done to conserve the water during a drought period. The people, the Pueblo people, learned this because they went through the hardships of surviving those drought years. And then utilizing the semi-arid seeds through plant breeding and utilization and trading from some of the people from the south. So these were in place. So that was what they call today a no-till way of planting and also dry farming.
The spirit moves through the water. An incredible word that we have for the source of life is something we talk about as the Bo-wa-ha, the water, wind, breath. It is there in the water and in the wind that we can see the spirit, that we can see life moving. It's there where the life force is visible, as well as in the clouds, of course. We don't take the life force and put it in a superhuman being, as Christians do with God. That already begins to show us the focus on human beings when you put the life force in a superhuman creature. God is superhuman form, but we keep it within the trees, within the water, within the wind, within the clouds. And we are to move through that context of the water, the wind, and breathe the same breath. We are breathing the same breath that the rocks do, that the wind does. That gives you a totally different feeling. This is it. There's no other reality. We don't go to heaven. We don't leave this dirty world to go to a golden, clean heaven. We are here. This is it. This is the world. It doesn't get any better than this. We can't take care of it if we think that it's a place to be shunned and that we have better things to look forward to. Then we can't walk respectfully where we are at this moment and take care of things and touch things with honor and breathe each breath. That's what that water, wind, breath is about. It's, my goodness, I can breathe it in and I become a part of this world. I mean, in no uncertain terms, I am a part of this world that I live in every second because I breathe it every second.
You see the pottery that we have here. They're adorned by the water serpent, or the Avanyu, that is the deity of the terrestrial waters, not only of the Rio Grande, but all the other tributaries that feed it. So it's traditionally, there's the prayers that go in into the art itself. The lightning cloud symbols are the same, prayers for moisture. Many times on an individual artist basis or as a family and then as a community as these people continue to follow the designs of the old people. Some of the other symbols, bear always knows water. Bear always knows where there's water. So these symbols again appear. Or the prayer feathers, or eagle feathers that are presented. Eagle is the bird that flies the highest, so we have those prayers that are going up and asking for a blessing or thanksgiving, a little bit of rain. We've been fortunate this year of having a little bit of winter. Last year we hardly saw any snow. We have some drought conditions that appear, then you know that we're going to have a drawdown. All the people that come into the area, you know, see the nice open air, the open mountains, but we have one limitation, which is water. So we have to be very careful to preserve this because we're borrowing from the future generations. When we do this, we have to make sure that there's enough And there may not be enough, you know. At that point, we have to learn to share.
Here, especially in the Southwest, you look around you and you see that horizon, 360-degree horizon around you. And then you see that blue with the clouds going over you. You are the center. At any point that you stand in the Southwest, you are the center and you are in containment. At any point that you stand in, you as the center. The Pueblo people really picked up on that and said, look, we live within the earth bowl. This is where we dwell. Wherever we are at the center, which is literally true. I mean, that's what we experience every day. We don't experience abstract planets out there or whatever, but we experience this in a very central way every day. And being at the center, seeing that far horizon with the mountains that contain us in this earth bowl, and all the symbolic kiva bowls that the Pueblo people make with the mountains along the rim of it, it is all about that. And then the earth is covered by the sky basket. And you're talking about the marriage between earth and sky. That's exactly what they were talking about, the father and the mother. But it was not in terms so much as of male and female as it was father and mother, which is a very different concept. Male and female then become included within father and mother. And that is a very different meaning than saying the male sky and the female earth, which brings in real explicit kind of sexuality, which the Pueblo people weren't so much interested in as in the parental nature of mother and father within which creation happens, because it's only when the male and female come together as father and mother and children are produced that creation really happens. This is the creation right now because those two have come around us. In that sense, then, Pueblo people talk about as community as having mothers and fathers and children. The oldest people are always talked about as father, and then their mothers in those communities also. Many, whether they're your mothers or not, whether they're your fathers, they're known as. But then everybody else is children. But those people are also children, but the flexibility of roles in that way, but the notion of having people who are responsible and nurturing and caring about the entire context that one lives in. It's that kind of model that was taken from the way they saw the cosmos as being structured, the way the cosmos is ordered. It is within that context that we live in.
I think the other part of it is that those early inhabitants were very clear about what they had to do to preserve the shrine systems that were on tops of the mountains and still are there today and still used, and keep them from being even approached in terms of permanent living systems, dwellings, or inhabited areas. In other words, they left sacred space. But the sacred space was everywhere, from one mountaintop to the other, and everything between. It reminds one every day when one looks at what Alfonso calls the table world, in both vertical dimensions as well as in horizontal planes. Reminds one that you are in a very unique place when you live in this part of the country. It has limitations, and you must care for that environment, or if you betray it, it will destroy you.
When I go up the canyon, I like to see how the trees blow and how the leaves fall on the water. It looks neat. And sometimes I play with the leaves in the water, make pictures. I like nature. There's a lot of things to do. The best part of it is I like to see the water flow and how it sounds. It's fun to get out in the wild.
You can't separate one from the other. You know, art, the environment, the culture. Many people call it religion. It's a way of life. It's what people do on a day-to-day. It's every day. They have to go hand in hand, working with plants, with the animals. It's within the ceremonial year that different things take place. Now we're into the winter ceremonies, giving thanks for the animals. You know, we've done our harvest dances and Thanksgiving of clouds and others that have brought us this far. So it's a continuous cycle. It's an ongoing cycle. And we're blessed today that we're able to have our community, our children, our grandchildren, and the uncles, and we're just kind of moving up the step. As we get older, we say, oh, you know, that's going to take a long time, being a grandfather. But when one of the elders, I was telling her that, you know, I have a grandson, and says, well, guess what? You're an elder now. Well, you know, it's a reaffirmation that we've just kind of moved up a notch. When we get beyond 100, then we're born again, and we start over. And when we leave, I think there's more work, but that's another story.
Elders in those communities played a very important part because they felt themselves to be connected. And I think that, you know, everything's work in union. If older people don't have a sense of their own meaning and their own sense of place within community, which I think a lot of people have lost in all communities, then other people can't relate to them that way. In any culture, we can't just honor somebody because they're 68 years old or whatever, but that 68 or 88-year-old person has something that flows out of them anyway. And that means that they've had a lifetime in which that they've thought about things and that they've been careful about things. And then they really can be people who can begin to put their arms around other people. And if they don't have that capability within themselves, then we are really all lost, because we need those older people to be coming around us and telling us, now stop, listen, look around you. You're acting too fast. Is this appropriate for where everybody else is, including where the clouds are? Is this what we should be doing? I mean, it just seems right for old people to be taking on that role. But what happens to people who don't grow up ever experiencing that for themselves? Then how can they do that for other people? And I think that's a real dilemma we've got, is we're having generations of people who don't know how to behave like that. And then how can they be older people who other people can respect?
My name sits on a soft, smooth lake. My voice sounds like gentle rain falling from the sky, hitting me like hard, strong lightning. When the cold wind comes, I flow from place to place. My name is soft, soft like a big flat quilt. A few winter days pass. Singing birds are looking for juicy worms. Blooming flowers grow. Life comes back into me. Flowers grow and trees fall on me. I am Queen Povi. I am Lake Flower. If you look into me, you'll see a beautiful person. You'll see yourself.
The dances that still happen, one of the primary things that's happening is that we're actually communicating with the clouds. It's a way of moving our bodies so that the energy, and it's energy communication, as it were, you take from it as you give it.
Oh,
What I've been thinking about a lot with community is that we've gotten too small a definition of community. And I go back to Pueblo thinking, because their community really was not just the human community. It included the place within which we lived, so that the mountains were part of community. The water was part of community. Trees, rocks, plants. You couldn't move through any day in that old world, even in when I was growing up, without knowing that you were part of that whole community of trees, rocks, people. Today, what we do is really just talk about human community, and it gets to be such a small thing within the larger scope of things. We keep making the world smaller and smaller until it's nothing but us. It's just human beings, out of context, out of our natural context, out of our cosmological context. We have become so small in our view of the world. Our world is simply us human beings. That's a crucial thing that we need to get beyond and move back again to seeing ourselves within context.
Featured on this episode of The Spirit of Place have been Dr. Dave Warren, Jose Lucero, Rena Swensel, and Tony Singer, all of whom are venerated members of the Santa Clara Pueblo, and Anthony Garcia singing San Juan Pueblo honor and farewell songs, and Pete, Jerry, and Cipriano Garcia singing a San Juan Pueblo cloud dance song. This 13-part radio series was produced for the Western States Arts Federation in association with KUNM-FM Albuquerque by Jack Leffler and Elaine Thatcher. Funding for this series was provided by the Ruth Mott Fund, the New Mexico Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the Utney Reader Magazine, offering thought-provoking points of view on culture and society from over 2,000 media sources. Please visit Utney Reader on the World Wide Web at utney.com. That's www.utne.com. This is Jack Leffler inviting you to remain attuned to the spirit of place. Thank you for listening.